Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour here on K104. We've returned for another show here with Jenna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. Happy Sunday morning to you and happy Sunday morning to you ladies. Hope you're doing well.
I'm recovering from my sugar coma from Easter.
Oh, you had a sugar coma?
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken you 7 days to recover?
I napped most of the day.
Nice.
And then I woke up and ate more cookies and candy and then napped more.
I can't even tell you the last time a piece of chocolate passed my lips.
Well, that's too bad. I feel sad for you.
I know the last time a piece of cupcake passed your lips.
Oh, yeah. No, but can I just tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry. She needs to complain about something. So, yeah. I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No. I mean, we're in the middle of the annual cup of cake awards here at K104.
Oh, that's right. And you're one of the esteemed judges.
I am one of many judges. And in years past, I've also been a judge. And in years past, I was never counting points as I was judging, but this year I was. So I put as little cupcake in my cupcake hole as humanly possible in order to still taste and judge the cupcakes. It was a challenge, but
you could have had a spit cup, like when you taste wine, you know, you swirl it around, taste it.
Yeah, that would have been pretty.
That's when you would have said, like, thank God this is radio.
I know. Right? And it was not, I got to tell you, it was not easy because I am deprived. I am chocolate deprived. I am dessert deprived. I'm cake deprived. I am deprived.
And they are fine cupcakes.
And then I decided to send you a bouquet of cupcakes. That didn't help either, did I? Sorry.
That did not.
Should have thought that through a little more. I just thought it was so cool.
Those cupcakes were beautiful. I think they were Baked Bouquet, I think, was the company. I posted that on Facebook if anybody wants to go back and look. They were amazing.
Oh, good. They look beautiful.
I did taste
them. How the raccoons like them?
I know. I had to distribute them at the office because
gotcha.
I could not do that. Anyway, so yeah, but I am down like 8 pounds, sometimes nine, depending.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm so deprived. Can I tell you one really stupid thing that's irritating me though today?
Of course. It would not be Happy Hour, Frankenberry, right? If you didn't complain about it.
Now, is it me?
No, not today.
Okay, good. Not today. Just making sure.
No, this is like the tiniest little, teeniest little thing, but because I'm on this stupid diet, I am consuming a lot of fruit because on Weight Watchers it's 0 points, so technically you could eat all the fruit you want all darn day and it's no points, which is kind of strange because of course fruit has calories
and a lot of sugar
but anyway,
and technically it's WW.
Oh, that's right.
I just saw the spot the other day with Oprah and whatever actors are pretending that they're on the program. And Oprah, with the rebranding of the thing from Weight Watchers.
WW?
They're just calling it WW now.
That's to be cooler, because Weight Watchers is kind of old-fashioned and it makes it sound like...
Well, it sounds like you're watching your
dumb
weight.
Yeah.
It's more syllables, isn't it? More syllables?
It's definitely more syllables. WW. Like, I'm tired now just by saying it.
You're saying 6 syllables instead of 3.
Weight Watchers. Well, I like to just call it, I'm on the points. On the points. Like, to me, that's cool. That's down. You get it. It doesn't really sound stupid.
You're right.
I'm on the points. Like, I'm on the marijuana. Or I'm on the Facebook.
Yeah, they should have renamed it that.
But I'm not on the marijuana. But I'm just saying, some people put the W.
Well, you could say then you are on the WW, which is kind of a little bit cooler than just WW.
No, it's not.
It's too much.
It is too much.
It's too much. So anyway, since I'm on the points, I consume a lot of fruit. And this morning I was taking some blueberries and putting them in a bowl. And one little tiny blueberry. Then I was on my stove. Now, not that long ago, I'd redone my kitchen. And since I don't spend any time at the stove, I didn't realize that there was one tiny little defect in the remodel until this morning. So I'm throwing some blueberries in a bowl. One tiny little blueberry bounces out and it rolls toward the back of my stove, so it's going to hit the backsplash, right? And so as it's rolling, I go to get it, and I miss it, and I push it farther along to the back of the stove until it disappears out of sight because I didn't realize there's a little gap, a blueberry-sized gap at the end of my stove between it and the backsplash. So now I'm so OCD that I'm going to obsess over that errant blueberry falling down behind the back of my stove.
Or what might crawl behind there and feed on it.
To eat it. Yes. And I haven't been able to stop thinking about that all morning. And yet, do I want to pull the entire stove out and retrieve it? No, I do not.
Is it gas or electric?
It's electric, so I probably could.
She did
Here
a wrong.
Here we go. She didn't have to
sigh.
Do it before. I have a blueberry story.
You have a blueberry story?
Yeah. So, I try to give my dog Ginger like little carrots or snacks, little pieces of zucchini, or you know whatever fruits there that is safe for them to have.
No grapes.
I learned that. So whenever you give her something she's really excited about, she takes it into our family room onto the carpet there, which we call Switzerland. Like it's her safe zone. She can bring things over there. So I was making a fruit smoothie from J.J. Smith's book, Dick Greens and Fruits. And I dropped a frozen blueberry off the counter. So she took it, went to Switzerland with it, spit it back out, rolled all over it.
Oh, no.
And had a purple stain on her coat for about 5 days, which I was like, oh, my God, you're so cute. She can do nothing wrong. She will lay there sleeping, and I'll be like, you're amazing. So, I didn't care if there was blueberry on my carpet, and I actually tried to preserve the stain on her coat because I thought it was so funny.
That is hilarious.
That's my blueberry.
Should take a little picture.
I think I did.
Speaking of doing no wrong, did we ever talk about this before? Because this is something that happened to me and I need to know. I might actually blog about this. When you go into a restaurant and you have the world's worst service, do you or do you not reflect that in the tip?
No, you've asked this question before.
And what were your answers?
Yes. Yes.
But like, you know, for example, is a bad service, does that equate to 15%? Or does bad service equate to a penny? Or does bad service equate to, like, what does it equate to percentage-wise?
I think it's a sliding scale, and here's why. If the bad service was not 100% the fault of the server, like maybe there was other things going on and that was obvious, or maybe the food wasn't so hot, or I don't know. I would give a small tip. But if it's clearly like you're in a restaurant, especially the nicer ones that you go to, and the waiter or waitress has a horrible attitude and just doesn't care, screw you.
Oh, I think that's different. Yeah, I think a lower tip is
yeah. I think it's just
cases.
I think it's the circumstances, and you're smart enough to figure out that you know a server may be flustered, it may be incredibly busy, they may be shorthanded. You know all this
right.
Kind
and the
of,
staffing wasn't their decision. They're
right,
doing the best they can. You see them running around.
But if somebody's just being an ass, or somebody, you know what I mean, if they just don't care, like Carol said, you know, or you seem to be a chore to them, well, that's a different story because now you're not performing your job the way you're supposed to. You're at least supposed to be somewhat accommodating. So you know, I think it just depends on.
Tell
each
us the
particular
story
situation
and what you end up doing.
So I'm notorious for getting mad at poor customer service, whether it's a restaurant or.
Well, I get it. You're a business owner, so you're sensitive to it.
Or it's a butt box. What it doesn't matter.
But or what?
Whether it's you know a restaurant or a butt box, it doesn't matter.
A butt box.
The sample thing you had to send away. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry.
That came back quickly.
That came back
quickly.
It was the DNA test.
My fault. Yeah.
I had them confused. My bad.
But in that circumstance.
Plus, I just wanted to say butt box.
Yeah, of course. In that circumstance.
Would you like to say it again?
There's no tipping involved. But like, if you ever had a bad haircut or bad service in a restaurant, right?
Yes.
That, you know, I never, ever tip less, but I was in a restaurant where it wasn't a case of an attitude. It's like a new restaurant that opened up, but it's not a new restaurant. It is a new
location
of an old restaurant. And I got to tell you, there's everybody in this restaurant that I could hear, like within earshot of me, was complaining about the service to the management to the servers. Like, I'm like, what is going on in here? Are they trying to be bad? Like, you know, when I walk in and somebody comes over and takes a drink order, I don't expect to wait 45 minutes at a restaurant for a drink. That was happening. Mm. Then they were bringing, literally, it was just so terrible. It was like they were bringing, I don't know, like, for example, like the entree, and then an hour after the entree, they're bringing the appetizer. Oh, like, it was so upside down. It's like, where have we landed? And I never, ever, like, I didn't call anybody over to complain. And I didn't reflect it in the tip. But I was like, never coming back here again. Which I think is almost worse. Right, you're not going to give them future business.
Yeah, it is worse. You're right. So you left with a clear conscience.
No, because I get mad at myself. I
did that with my hair. I had in December, a real bad experience.
And you tipped the same amount that you would.
Expensive,
right?
And I tipped, and I walked out going, "What? Why? What did I just do?" That's almost like not setting boundaries. It's almost like not finding your voice, like standing up for yourself. Like, I don't want to hurt people or cause harm, but I felt like I was a pansy.
That's what bothers me about it. And Frankenberry won't relate to this, but I was listening to somebody else who was talking about getting a pedicure, which Frankenberry, you've probably never had in your entire life.
You are absolutely correct.
But trust me.
Would you like to?
They are wonderful.
No, they're not.
And this person was complaining that she was getting a pedicure, and that part of the pedicure is a foot massage, and that she wanted a fairly, I don't know, what do you call it, hard foot massage, strong foot massage. Mm-hmm. And she kept trying to explain that to the person doing it, and the person couldn't get it. So she finally stopped the massage like 10 minutes in and said, "I don't want you to finish my 30-minute massage." And her whole point was that made her feel empowered to be able to say, you know what, since you're not doing it the way I want it, I don't want it at all. And I'm saying to myself, I could probably never do that. But do I get it? Like, should we be doing that? When stuff is happening to us that we don't like, does that just make you a bitch? Or does that make you a boundary person? That's what I'm struggling with.
I think it makes you a woman or a person who knows what they want and what they don't want and is able to set boundaries and speak up for themselves. I don't think it's ever called for to be mean about it. And I personally have a hard time with it, but particularly women, we are raised in a culture to be pleasers and to put the feelings of everybody else above our own. And I don't ever go out of my way to cause harm, but sometimes I think I might, to a fault, not speak up because I'm putting someone else's
feelings ahead of my own. I guess, complaining about food in a restaurant. I have never sent a meal back.
I will not, because I've just seen too many horror.
Oh yeah, yeah. I would never send a meal back either. But the other thing is too. Remember that this is a situation where, look, if I've paid for a service, or if I've paid for a product and it comes to my house and it's broken or there's a piece missing, all right, that's one thing. But when you're dealing with people directly, it's a whole different story, because now your reaction to whatever the product that you paid for that you're unsatisfied with, your reaction is different when your reaction is being directed at somebody who's sitting 2 feet away from you. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, so if you're getting this pedicure and you're just unhappy with the pedicure, it's a lot more difficult to look at somebody in the eye and say, "I do not like the product you're giving me right now," as opposed to being on the phone with a customer service rep for something that you didn't pay for.
So you think there's a difference. You leave and call and complain.
Yeah, that's it. You have to go to a payphone around the corner. Mm.
Send an anonymous note.
Yeah, exactly.
With cutout letters from a magazine.
Yeah.
Because I do think, on the one hand, I applaud this person for doing it. On the other hand, it made me cringe hearing the story.
You part admire, you're part mortified.
Yeah.
And the other thing is too, you know, it's I really don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
No.
And again, this brand new restaurant, how do I know that maybe the management just doesn't know what they're doing and they've directed these people in the wrong way, or they're behind because it's a brand new restaurant. They're busier than they should be.
Right.
And maybe the wait staff is fairly new. You know, if it's a brand new place, maybe
well
they
trained.
Hired. Maybe they opened up too quickly. So again, I'm not going to hurt anybody's feelings. And I also know, because I've been a bartender and I've been a server, I know that there are bad days. Me, I had a way to deal with it because I'm a little bit more personable than some other folks. But still, I know what they live on. And I would feel bad to walk out of there. As long as they did not have an attitude and treat me like crap.
Right. That's just no.
I would still be giving them whatever it is that I would normally give somebody.
I think the attitude probably changes the game. Like, I feel that I'm pretty good at, if I really needed to speak up about something that was just going haywire. I'm
like your cab or Uber driver. Is that a good example?
That was then. This is now.
This is a brand new me, Carol.
Right. That time that you almost got dumped on the side of Route 9 by the cab driver?
Yes.
Because you
spoke up? That was old Jonna. New Jonna is a little more tactful, I think, and that I like to diffuse things with humor. If I'm going to say something that someone's going to construe as negative, I like to maybe be funny about it and be lighthearted and warn them. Say, listen, I have to offer some criticism, but I don't mean this in a mean way, to sort of make it better.
And it's going to come out and sound really freaking sarcastic. Just want to give you the heads up.
You think so?
I'm just kidding.
Crap. New Jonna doesn't like that.
New Jonna doesn't like that.
Well, actually, this would be kind of middle ground Jonna, because the old Jonna is not thinking of humor at all. The new Jonna is thinking of humor, so you probably have to go the sarcasm step first before you get to actual humor. You know, it's a slow process. It's baby steps.
You're easing into
actual humor.
Yeah, it's like kind of taking off in a plane, like taxi, 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 taxi,
exactly.
Wheels up.
Yes.
Gotcha. I'll have to remember that.
I have on numerous occasions reached out to a business owner after the fact about a product or a service.
So you're good at that because you're very good. You're a very good wordsmith. And
yes,
you can type out, you know, it's like you have golden fingertips on your computer and you can say those things. And
because it's sincere. And here's how I present it. As a business owner, if someone's not going to return to my business, I want to know why.
Yeah.
And that's how I present it. I'm not here to give you a hard time. I'm not asking for anything.
Right.
As a mutual business owner, this is with respect, I tell you this. This is why I won't be coming back.
Here's a question. Have you ever gotten a thank you from one of those?
Yeah.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
More so than not?
No, it hasn't happened a million times.
It doesn't happen
times,
a lot. Yeah, I know. Because I think that's interesting if you were to get a thank you as opposed to just radio silence, as opposed to how dare you comment on my business.
Right. And let's flip this for a second. I'm also somebody who tries to be quick about when something is impressive to communicate that as
That's true.
And to do that to the right people.
So you're just an in-person Yelp review.
You're right.
She's I'm not on Yelp. Yelp but
I'm just kidding.
I hate Yelp.
But case in point. One of your attorneys, Lori Gilmore Morris,
mm-hmm.
helped me with a closing just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I made it a point last week when I saw you to say, I know you already know this, but she was phenomenal to work with. She was on point, the details, and had a fantastic attitude. She made the whole process that much more enjoyable. But I do that not only with you because I know you, but other business owners or, you know, if a waiter or waitress is like, holy cow, they're amazing. I'll make sure I comment to the manager or the hostess or something on the way out.
And I will say the same thing about Lori, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Lori has been
great.
Very helpful
thank
to me you. In the past.
Yeah, she's good. Very good with those details.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to hire people to surround yourself with people who are good at the things you're not good at.
Details and being nice.
On that note.
All right, yeah.
So who do we got coming up today, ladies?
All right, so this is, you guys ever hear of Christiane Northrup? She's a big deal in women's health and emotional health. Look her up.
Okay.
She's all right. I know. Anyway, she is a big deal. So her daughter, Kate Northrup, also a big deal. She is the author of the best-selling book, Money, A Love Story. But that's not what we're talking about today. She has just come out with a new book called Do Less, A Revolutionary Approach to Time and Energy Management for Busy Moms. Now, I will say this. I'm almost done with her book. Whether you are a mom or not, she has really powerful cases and exercises for how we can be more of who we are and have more of what we want by actually paring back and doing less. It's really, really good stuff. So when we come back, we'll be talking with her.
All right. That sounds good. That is what is on the way here. You've got Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we will return. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And it's Happy Hour here on K104 with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And we have returned for our second segment this morning. And, of course, second segment is always where we bring on
people smarter than us.
Exactly. Whatever fabulously smart guest we have this week.
Oh, I got you a good one.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Introduce us to Kate.
Trust me on this. And here's what I'm going to love about this interview. So, Frankie Berry, you know that Jonna, self-proclaimed, is the one who asks the stupid questions,
yeah.
She says. So, the topic for today is going to be counterintuitive to what our dynamo co-host here, Jonna Spilbore. The topic is going to be about Kate Northrup's new book, Do Less, A Revolutionary Approach to Time and Energy Management for Busy Moms. So we're going to have Kate convince Jonna that we can actually be more of who we are and get more done by doing less. And I just know it's going to prompt a stupid question.
That ain't going to be easy. Okay.
Okay. So on the line with us, very, very thrilled and honored to have with us Kate Northrup. She is an entrepreneur, best-selling author, speaker, and mother. She has built a multimedia digital empire with her husband, Mike Watts, that reaches hundreds of thousands globally. They're committed to supporting ambitious women to light up the world without burning themselves out in the process. I love that. Her first book, Money, A Love Story, has been published in 5 languages, and her second book, Do Less, A Revolutionary Approach to Time and Energy Management for Busy Moms, this is really for all women, is now available wherever books are sold. Kate's work has been featured by The Today Show, Yahoo Finance, Women's Health, Glamour, the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, Wanderlust, The Huffington Post, and more. Kate lives with her husband and business partner, Mike, and their daughters in a cozy town in Maine. Kate, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, this is going to be fun, convincing hardworking attorney and national legal correspondent.
Listen, I'm all ears. Trust me.
So, Kate, if we could start with your backstory a bit on this. There's always a story behind why people come to write a book and what they want to share. So if you could share with us the backstory behind what caused you to write and want to write the book Do Less.
Yes. So I was in a creative pause between basically after my last book, Money, A Love Story, came out, and I felt like there was something wrong with me. I was just really in an ebb of my career. And then I got pregnant, and I have never experienced being so exhausted in my life. And it was the first time that I had something going on with me that I couldn't just push through or work harder to overcome. And I was like sleeping all the time and cut my work hours about in half. But the thing is, my husband and I run our own company. We didn't have a company paying maternity leave, paternity leave. And in the United States, we don't have any paid family leave. So we needed to get the same results revenue-wise. And after that first year of parenthood, we did have, unfortunately, a sick baby. She's doing great now, but that first year was really rough. She was sometimes waking up, you know, every 10 minutes at night, and we only had 10 hours of childcare. But what was so miraculous is that when we sat down a year after her birth, we realized that we had made the same amount of money that year as we had in previous years when we had worked twice as much. Hmm. And so we thought, well, what the heck were we doing all of those years working so many hours? And I thought, I am not that special. If this could be true for us, this could be true for other people. So I began researching and experimenting on how we can achieve more by doing less.
And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the research that you discovered and what is the dynamic that gives us better results by figuring out how to do less.
Yeah, so one of the really interesting studies was produced in the Harvard Business Review, and they talked about that even high performers, athletes, artists, novelists, who cannot focus more than 4 to 5 hours a day on things that really move the needle forward. So we have this idea of the 40-hour work week, which, by the way, the average American works 47 hours a week. So most people are working more than 40 hours. And it was invented in the Industrial Revolution, having to do with the way machines work. It actually is not evidence-based, it's not based on humans, and it's actually not based on productivity. What the studies show is that a 30-hour work week, or even for some people, a 24-hour work week, allows us to get the same amount of results-producing work done, and so keep our productivity, but also massively increase our well-being, which decreases absenteeism at work and decreases lost energy and time due to workplace drama. So countries like Sweden are actually moving towards a national 30-hour work week, and companies that have already adopted it are noticing that their productivity is the same, but they have happier workers, which over time leads to more productivity and more creativity.
Jonna is going to not let her staff listen to this.
She's going to send them all on a retreat on Sunday morning.
Actually, that's funny and kind of true. But here's what, you know, what I find, Kate, just in observing, so I do own a business. And what I've observed over the years is that, you know, we have this a lot of time where we expect people to be, you know, in the office doing stuff. And I know that, let's say, that if you use an 8-hour day, for example, that my people are not productive 8 of 8 hours. I don't think any person, I'm not saying that to criticize them, that, you know, they take their breaks. It's not like a factory where, like, oh, everybody take a 15-minute break now, but they'll take some downtime, they'll relax, they'll walk around, they'll take a walk, what have you. And I used to, that used to make me cringe and make me want to fire everyone. And then I realized that, wait a minute, if that's what they need, if they need a 20-minute break because then the next 20 minutes is going to be ultra productive, then you go ahead and take your 20-minute break. So now I'm hands off when it comes to that.
That's awesome.
Believe it or not.
I don't.
Sometimes because I still get the heebie-jeebies, but yeah, it's the most fun.
But you know, that's our cultural programming, this idea that we should be doing something 24 hours a day, because mm-hmm. we've been programmed to believe that how much we do equals how much we are worth.
Right.
What's actually true, though, that the data shows is that when we work 50 minutes on, 50, and take a 15-minute break for every chunk of 50-minute work, we actually get more done when we are at our desk, because our brain doesn't, at the first sign of fatigue, space out or pick up our phone and start scrolling or open a new tab on our browser or start a new task. Because what happens is when our brain hits that first sign of fatigue, it will try to alert itself by changing activities. And the data shows that we get distracted every 11 minutes. And if somebody else isn't distracting us, we're distracting ourselves. And it takes us 25 minutes to get refocused. So it doesn't take a mathematician to figure out that we are spending 0 minutes focused on the task at hand at work, in that flow state where we really do our best work, and we experience a state of high performance and also really joyful timelessness.
Can I ask?
Here we go. Can I ask a stupid question?
She didn't think I had a stupid question in me today.
Oh, I knew you did.
But,
yeah. By the way, Kate, I don't ask any questions because I don't want to win.
So just approaching this like from a really practical standpoint, what's your opinion on, like, is it good or bad or indifferent if you, like me, for example, I often try to put myself in a reward zone. Like when I have to get something done, I'll be like, I cannot name it, get on the treadmill, have a cocktail, leave the office until I finish XYZ. And so no matter what, I'm going to power through XYZ because I want that reward. It's like Pavlovian. Is that a good method, a stupid method, an outdated method? Does anybody do that but me anymore? Like, what happens
Bueller?
There?
Bueller?
Anyone? Bueller?
First of all, I just want to say that I love that getting on the treadmill is one of your rewards.
I agree with that. I'm with you.
Let's talk
like,
about
reward?
That first. but that's awesome. Secondly, actually, I would say it's probably not, in terms of the evidence, it is not the greatest way to be the most productive, because what we tend to do when we push through and do something no matter what, mm-hmm. when we've pushed through fatigue and our bodies need to take a break, what ends up happening is we make more mistakes, we take longer to get it done, versus let's say it's, 7 o'clock at night. You're exhausted. You've been at the computer all day. It's really time to go home and have dinner and like take it easy. But you push through for 2 more hours or, into the night, right? Pulling all-nighters. Mm-hmm. what ends up happening is then you make more mistakes, you're slower doing it, versus if you just stopped and went and got on the treadmill or took, you know, took a walk around the block or whatever you may need to do, got a great night's sleep, then you can come back fresh and get at it and maybe get done in an hour what it would have taken you 3 hours to do at the end of the day because your brain was done.
Your brain was mush. Got it.
So we have this... it would be wonderful if every employer were listening and decided to give their employees more time off so they could be happier. And I totally agree and get the evidence supports that. But one of the challenges we have, Kate, is that it's so ingrained in, we are so programmed to see our worth based on our productivity, that it's difficult, even if you don't have the exterior constraint saying you have to work these hours, you have to get this much done, that internal pressure that we are not good enough until we do more. So how do we begin to change how we see that and change our own programming so we recognize how to let go of that pressure and be more of who we are and be more creative and more quality work?
Well, one of the things I recommend, this came from a conversation I had with my husband a couple of months back. He was sick and he was like, God, I feel like I didn't get anything done today. And I, da, 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 da. And you know, it was kind of like in that conversation about that the day was a failure, that the day was wasted. And I said, well, what if at the end of the day, you judged how the day went based on how you feel instead of based on how much you got done?
Wow.
And it was a really different conversation because he was like, well, actually, you know, I had a really good time with our kids and I read this great book and I watched this super interesting interview on YouTube. You know, so he was really taking stock of the quality of his life, which at the end of the day, there are zero people on their deathbed saying, I wish that I had worked more hours. Mm-hmm. Nobody is saying that. In fact, Bronnie Ware wrote a book called The Five Biggest Regrets of the Dying. And they are, you know, that they wish that they had stayed in touch with friends, that they wish they had had the courage to follow their own dreams, that, you know, like things like that. But it's not, I wish I had worked more and gotten more done.
You know, the part about the guilt that comes with when you are just relaxing, but the part of your brain is like, I really should be working. I really should be doing this. I really should be doing that. And then you're just watching like Housewives of New York City instead.
And that, but it's, she's asking for a friend.
Yeah, right. when what you should be doing is looping in the back of your head when you're trying to relax, then you're not doing either effectively. You're not working. You're not relaxing.
It's like having your foot on the brake and the gas at the same time. And that is an hour of completely wasted time because you haven't replenished yourself and you also haven't gotten anything done.
And you know,
welcome
Kate,
to my world.
There's this side project that I've been working on for the last few months. And, you know, I'll see myself with the fellow that I talked to. He's a really great guy and he knows what, you know, the project, you know, he wants the project to move forward. I've been doing my best to move it forward with him. But, you know, when I see an email on a Sunday morning at 10:30 or on a Monday evening at 10:30 asking how things are going, I sit back and I am just amazed at, really, dude? Sunday morning at 10:30. Well, I mean, you know,
you don't have to answer it when
I'm not answering it. Believe me, I can tell you that right now. But still, it's that whole, it's, you know, looking at some other people who just never turn it off and they're constantly working. And I want to look and be able to say, you know, to him, dude, don't you ever just take a walk?
Yeah.
You know, just give yourself a break. You know, I go home. I'm not looking at email unless I see a notification on my phone that annoys me. You know, but I'm not actually going to look at the email. And I just, you know, you want to look at other people and say, you really need to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah, and then we need to look at ourselves and say the same thing.
Yeah, exactly, right. Exactly.
It's so true.
I want to talk for a second. In chapter two of your book, and this is speaking to the mothers here, because I think probably more than ever, there's pressure on on parents to, well, and let's talk about women specifically, to stand up, work. They are definitely working more than in prior generations, but then also be the one that does the grocery shopping and the taking care of the kids and being the mom and being the wife also. And you talk about like the struggle with work-life balance and then the guilt that a mom might have when she does for herself. And I'm going to quote something from your chapter two on the topic of motherhood, because I think this can like slam the brakes on it, put it all in perspective very powerfully and eloquently. Is it ironic that I just had trouble saying eloquent?
It's funny.
Okay, so on motherhood, raising the next generation is the most important job in the world. So why do so many of us feel like the work we do with our families doesn't mean as much as the work we do that earns money? So powerful. I mean, if you want to, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, it's because we live in an economic system that has, you know, mothering and parenting, because there's fathering as well, is invisible labor. It is not paid. It's not included in the gross national product, but it's critical for the furtherment of society. But it is literally not valued, especially in the United States, where we are like one of the only countries that has zero support for new parents.
It's not easy. This is why I have a dog. No. No, I think I would have had that. It just never happened. Right? That's okay. I have a blessed life. I'm just, you know, just making a joke here. I want to read something else from your book, Do Less, that really drives home the point of living a better quality life by doing less. And on the topic of being stressed and overwhelmed. And I think maybe a few ears just perked up when I said that, because I think we all experience stress and feeling overwhelmed. And you say, life is like this. We wake up one day and realize our lives are really full and we're exhausted and wondering, is this all there is? Then you go on to say, despite what our commercial culture would have us believe, the answer to this feeling of tired emptiness is not to add more to our lives, though. The answer is to strip back what's not adding to our satisfaction and joy, so we're left with the simple basics of what really matters. I think this is so powerful, because I think all of us at different times deal with that sense of I'm not doing enough or I'm not enough, period. And so we try to do more and be more and accomplish more to fill that feeling of being empty and not good enough. When completely counterintuitive to that, if we get in touch with what matters to us and start stripping away and saying no to things and doing less, we feel more fulfilled. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it really, like, we have to give ourselves the space. It's like we've filled our lives so full that we edge out fulfillment and joy. And fulfillment and joy needs real estate. And we cannot take up all the real estate with all the to-dos. Otherwise, there's no space for it.
Wow. I love it. I think we're about wrapping up here on time. We're wrapping up here with Kate Northrup discussing her latest book, Do Less, A Revolutionary Approach to Time and Energy Management for Busy Moms. This book is fantastic, loaded with very insightful things to make you step back and look at your life, as well as very concrete, specific actions you can take. And I'm telling you right now, if you're not a mom, buy it anyway. I'm getting so much out of it about how to do less and actually experience more joy, more happiness, more fulfillment. Kate, where can people get your book? And then you have a membership called Origin. You also have a course. Can you talk about those for a moment?
Sure. You can get the book anywhere. Books are sold, your local bookstore, Amazon, wherever. And you can get some free gifts with the book over at katenorthup.com/book. I also have a course called the Money Love Course that has over 5,000 graduates to date who have used it to help them make more money, pay off their debt, and become better financial money managers. And then we have Origin, which is my membership for women who want to practice achieving more by doing less. It's around time and energy management and changing our relationship to work. And it's specifically geared for female entrepreneurs or female intrapreneurs who have that entrepreneurial spirit within a company. And that is a monthly membership. You can find out more at origincollective.com.
I love it.
I think it'd be a game changer.
Sure could be. And your website is katenorthrup.com, right?
It is.
All right. Very good. Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and sharing your insight and wisdom with us through your work, through this interview, and through your books.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Kate. We appreciate it. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we've still got more to come this morning, so don't go nowheres. We'll talk to you in a few minutes. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And it is Happy Hour here on this Sunday morning on K104 with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
Well, Kate had some very, very good points, and some points that would certainly give people something to think about, something to chew on, really, because, you know, it is certainly possible, like she said, to get as much done in a little bit less time, to do less.
It is possible, and she only cited one study, I think, and there's multiple studies that she cited in the book about our ability, even just our brain cycles and energy levels, and our ability to get more done with less time, because we have to be focused, number one. Number two, we're having more time to ourselves to be ourselves, to do things that we enjoy, which makes us happier, which then cycles around to make us more productive.
I think, yeah, the name of the game, I suppose, is productivity, but we really should be more results-oriented. Because I wasn't lying when I said to her, like, when I try to relax, I beat myself up for relaxing. And that is just not...
No, it's not good.
It's not good. And then every once in a while, I'll switch it up, and I'll have let's say it's a rainy Saturday, and I'll do nothing but binge-watch TV. I'll make myself stop feeling guilty, and do I still get everything done over the weekend that I want to get done? I think I do. If you just, like, you have to, I'll say, I'm going to take this 8 hours and I'm going to be a vegetable. And then enjoy being a vegetable.
This weekend. And that's one thing I love about a rainy weekend this time of year. Because it's almost like permission to do nothing. And I think you need that. We just think we always need to be doing. And yes, I'm driven. And yes, there's things I want to accomplish. And yes, I want to enjoy the fruits, enjoy the now, and enjoy the things that are not always going to be around.
Right. And if your quality of life is a little bit higher, everything else comes with it. Everything
You're
else
right,
gets
Frank
raised
Barry.
Along with it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're miserable all the time because you're forced to work and you're forced to not be able to say to yourself on a Saturday, I'm going to take 8 hours to be a vegetable. Then if you're miserable, then you don't want to go to work. And if you don't want to go to work, when you get to work, your productivity is going to be off. It's going to be awful because you're not going to care.
You know, we've talked about this before. You spend a lot of time, those of us who have who work outside, even when you work inside the home, you spend a lot of time working, like a third of your life, pretty much. You gotta, if you're not going to love it, you gotta like it, for crying out loud.
There's something else that we didn't get to talk about in the interview because we only have so much time. And there may be someone listening right now, I'll go, yeah, I get it, but I don't have a choice because there's so many demands on my time right now that I don't have a choice. I have to pick my kids up. I have to feed them. I have to go to the grocery store. I have to work to pay the bills. And you might be thinking, you're crazy if you think I can just choose to cut back on that.
Right.
And I get that. There are certain restraints that at this time you might not have choice about. But a topic she really delves into a lot, two different chapters about it. One is to be willing to receive help when it's offered. She talks about her newborn who had serious eczema. The poor baby was just like scratching and itchy and crying all the time, and she was hardly sleeping. And then she was having a breakdown one day and her mom offered to come over, and she was like, no. And she goes, it was like, in retrospect, I look back and like, stupid, I had help that was offered to me. And so I think we need to learn, especially as women, that it does not mean we're weak when we accept help, that it takes a strong woman to accept help. Take it to the next step further. Her chapter after that is about specifically asking for help when you need it. And she says, don't wait until the last minute when you're completely overwhelmed and it's last minute that you're even asking for help and you're crying and you're stressed. Plan it out in advance, and don't be afraid to reach out for people, whatever support you might have in your social circle, whether it's relative, whether it's friends, and ask for that help, because it shows you're coming from a position of strength. Do it sooner than later. And if you think about it, we're all advocates of doing kind things for other people.
Yeah, offer to help.
Right. Offer to help other people and be okay with accepting help, because the people feel good when they're able to help you. So it's a key. I'm telling you, the book is fantastic. It's called Do Less by Kate Northrup. Again, whether you're a mom, whether you're not a mom, there's really powerful lessons about what you can do actively to live a better quality life.
Better quality life, right? Quality. And it goes along, and I really do think there's a trend. Look, I'm not there yet, but there is a trend that really less is more, mm-hmm. if you think about it. And it started back with Tim Ferriss. How old is the 4-hour work week?
Oh, my God.
That's an old book now.
Yeah, at least a decade.
Yeah, if not more than that. Mm-hmm. Like, he sort of got that train going. And we haven't perfected yet, because I think a lot of people hear this and go, do less, oh my God, and they freak out like me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there is definitely something to it. So she was, and I love, and I have not read the book. I'm going to read the book. I'm not going to let the word mom in the title scare me. We should put it, you know, I'll get the book and I'll write in dog with
dog
a little
mom.
Arrow. That's what I will do. So Frank and Barry, you don't have, you usually have something funny for us in segment 3. Not today.
Oh, thank you for
letting
me.
She's going to put you on.
Thank you for letting me disappoint everybody. Hey, I didn't know that was coming. Appreciate it. Hey,
sorry.
Mom, you listening? I'll disappoint you again too while we're at it.
Sorry.
Call Beck. Call my sister. no, I don't have anything in particular at the moment. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Do you have any animal stories? How are the little baby foxes doing?
The little baby foxes at the house are doing very well. And one of them has some issues, suffers from some seizures and moves a little slow, but he's actually been, picking up the pace lately. I've noticed he's gotten a little bit quicker. He's moving around the downstairs a little bit. So it's just, it can be a very interesting house. You know,
Frankenberry lives on an animal sanctuary.
Well, I don't live at the sanctuary, but my landlady owns one down the hill. But she herself, a lot of the animals that end up at the sanctuary or end up at the shelter down the hill do pop their head in. Yeah, then a lot of it is just so they can get acclimated. You know, you bring up a couple of puppies to get acclimated to the big girls and the other dogs, and basically just and get acclimated to the cats too, so that when somebody comes in looking for an animal, you can say, hey, listen, this particular dog right here gets along with everybody. So if you've already got a cat, you're all set.
I have a question, because I saw something on the Facebook.
Is it stupid?
On the Facebook?
I saw something on the Facebook, and yes, it's very stupid, but I couldn't stop watching it. So my question is, what is the smallest animal ever received at the sanctuary? And the reason I ask is because on the Facebook,
because
there's a video of a person who rescued a squirrel that electrocuted itself on
and they gave it CPR
yeah. and almost gave it mouth to mouth, and the squirrel got revived and survived. And that made me think,
and it's
has
weird.
Has Celia ever taken a squirrel?
It's weird that you say that, because now it's kind of a sad story, but it does have its moments.
I don't want sad story.
Then just shush for a second. I wrote a post about it. It's at my Frankenberry's attic when I had to say goodbye to Blink a couple of weeks ago, because she had feline leukemia and it was very mm-hmm. fast working. But on that final day when Celia came up to help me out with Blink, For one moment, I looked at Celia and I went, what's going on with your shirt? And that's when a baby squirrel crawled out of her shirt. Because exactly that. She came across two baby squirrels that must have been left behind by mom. So she was keeping them warm. Basically, they were in her bra. And they were in the front of her shirt.
Celia.
I mean, yeah. So it was obviously a sad moment for me, because I missed that little one. But
you see her breasts moving under her.
So, yes, she has rescued that. And there's been, again, baby raccoons. She's been bottle feeding them for the last few weeks. Finally, They got big enough to be taken to the next step, and so
what's the next step? My house?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I think I told you guys this story. I rescued a drowning chipmunk out of my neighbor's pool one time.
I don't think you told us.
It was because I think it was a long time ago, and I think you were like, ew, like, why'd you touch that? I thought maybe I dreamt it. But it was like barely holding its head above water and treading, and it was cold.
Oh.
So I got the net, I scooped it up, and I laid it in the rocks next to the pool, and the thing was just like gasping and shivering. Oh. And I thought, that's not enough. Because it wasn't like a warm summer day for the sun to come on it. So I picked it up and I held it close against my body. And then I went and got a heating pad and a box and a towel and warmed it. And wouldn't you know, that thing just warmed up, bounced right back to life. I tipped the box over and off it went.
Good karma points there.
Yes, really it's nice to get a good save.
Yeah. On that note,
that's nice to get a good save.
I think that's a happy note to end the show.
That is a happy note to end. And this has been Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. Hope you have enjoyed another Sunday show here. And we'll be back again next Sunday. 7 o'clock is when we do it here on K104. And we'll look forward to talking to you then. You all have a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.